shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendrick.
Okay, we are not connected to Ted's?
Not just yet.
All right. I thought I heard Ted just very briefly there, and perhaps if we get the line going, we can get Ted Bell. Ted, are you there?
I thought I was on your air there for a moment, but someone turned the radio up, and they said they just heard me. They said they heard some sound.
Yeah, we had you very briefly, but the line was not yet fully connected. I apologize.
Well, all right. And I'm saying this. I know that we're on the air right now, correct?
Yes, we are.
All right. Well, I'm saying this on the air, but that will make the fourth consecutive appearance I've been on your program that I have been brought on in a way that...
I apologize, Ted. It's a technical mishap. They do happen.
Yeah, but that's the fourth consecutive time that I've been brought on your program that that's happened.
I understand that. I apologize. We will work and make every effort in the future.
Well, hold on for a minute, because this will interest your listeners. What you're giving me there, Phil, is what we call in my business, we call that the straw hat. And what the straw hat is when you say to a customer, I'm very sorry, we'll make every effort. And you really know in your deep in your heart, you're not going to make every effort. You're not really going to change much of anything. You're just going to keep doing what you do. You just made that one mistake. But you're not going to make every effort. So you're giving me what we call the straw hat. And
the straw... No, I'm not. I No, I'm not. I knew that you were... let me tell you exactly what happened.
Please.
We knew that you were going to be on the show tonight, but we decided, as you know, when Bud called you, to shift you to the first hour. We're going to have Margaret Gray on the second hour talking about sanitation at McDonald's. But we didn't want her talking about sanitation at McDonald's and then go into your hour, which might affect people's perception of your restaurant.
All right, I appreciate that very much, and I did get that phone call.
Okay, what didn't happen is that after Bud had called you, we did not establish the ISDN, not the ISDN, we didn't establish the phone line to the restaurant properly, and so that when we brought on your jingle, you were not yet there.
When you say you had not yet established the phone line properly, are you saying that you had not yet dialed the number? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
All right, well then speak English. You know.
Well, I...
didn't dial the number. You know, when you... I think your audience understands, Phil, that... You know what that means. You don't have... We didn't establish the number properly, and we have the ISDN and the connection. It all sounds very impressive and very technical, but really what we're talking about is you haven't picked up the phone and gone boop, 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 you know, done the... Where is it? Over here. You didn't do that, did you?
No.
And who's supposed to do that?
Bud.
There you go. This guy, Bud, I gotta tell you.
I forgot. I didn't have your number on me.
He didn't have my number on you. Let me say this, Phil. I hope he doesn't have my number on him. I don't necessarily want my number on him, but I'd like it somewhere in your studio so that when you guys are ready to call me, you've got the number.
You're absolutely right. Everything you're saying is right.
Well, that's a first for me. I feel very good about that.
Well, you know, everything is... We were very... And I'm saying this to you, Bud. You were completely... You know, what were you thinking?
I did call him up and told him that we was going to go to him, and then I hung up.
Yeah, in other words, he should have kept me on the line.
You should have kept him on the line because you only called him about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, but then he would be sitting there and everything.
I don't care. I'd rather be sitting there than, you know, they tell me that what I sounded like when I was on just a moment ago was like that. That's all they heard.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
And you're laughing, aren't you?
Yeah, well, the way you did it, it was very funny, but that's exactly what happened. The line was not connected properly, so that when you started to talk, all we got was this quick blast of a consonant or a syllable.
Yeah, what was it? Terry Binford's here, and she said, go ahead, do it, Terry. That's what I sounded like. That's great, thank you. Thank you very much.
Ted, you know what? I think everybody knows that in radio it is a... It's a constant struggle when we're doing live to keep things technically connected. I don't think anyone's going to blame you for that. If they do, I'd like to say openly that it is our fault and that you are a fine sponsor, and we're sorry that we brought you on in such a manner, and that we will attempt to do it better in the future.
All right, I appreciate that very much, but like I said, you know, I'm just an individual here trying to make a living, just like everybody else. Phil, people think that I'm a millionaire, and if you want to talk in technical terms, all right, I do have money, and I have money that, yes, if you were to count it, it would go into the millions. Now that's what the technical aspect is, but I'm struggling like everyone else. I struggle like everyone else to make a living. When you say that a man's a billionaire, and you say that the man has money in the millions, what you don't say is, well, is he paying for a business? Is he supporting, you know, is he paying salaries? Is he running a business? Does he have expenses? And all of that is very true. And after I get done paying all those expenses, do I still have millions? The answer to that question is also a yes. Yes, I do. But those millions are subject to inflation. They are subject to the constant pressures on the dollar. And they're subject, certainly, to the constant pressures that I have in my business. So I don't sleep any better than anybody else at night just because I am technically a millionaire, just because I technically have that kind of money.
Well, you also have your money in gold, as you've told us.
I do, yes.
And you have purchased gold to such an extent that you've had the gold, in some instances, turned into things, I know.
What do you mean, turned into things?
You said you put a statue.
Hold on, but I'll talk to the guy.
Yes, I did. He's right. I had a figurine, if you want, Phil, made for the front of our house, and it is a family figurine. I'm hoping it becomes an heirloom. I'm hoping that our son Josh takes it and passes it down. It is myself and Marcy and Josh. It is a beautiful beautiful statue that was formed by a young artist named Vladimir Pardin. That's P-A-R-D-I-N. He is from the Ukraine, and he fashioned this out of, I believe it was originally stone, but it is gold-plated. So we used solid gold plating.
And you have this in front of your house?
Yes, we do. We have it in front of our house. And I don't think it's ostentatious. It is a gold statue of myself and my wife and my son. And then we have a gold statue of only me, which we have at the foot of the driveway. So is this ostentatious? I don't think so. I think it's an investment. And I think it's the kind of investment that I'm very proud to make. I think that, you know, when you invest in something, you don't just keep it in a vault. But you do something with it. And
you also mentioned that you've had...
Hold on, please. You interrupted me. I was going to say, you invest and you also make something out of it. End of sentence, period. Okay, go ahead.
I apologize. You had said...
That's all right.
Okay, you had said that you had made a tea set?
No, sir, not a tea set. No, we made serving trays. We have a set of serving trays and we have a set of dinnerware. A tea set? When did I ever say a tea set?
I'm sorry. Well, I guess the thing that stuck in my head was the serving tray. And
well, that doesn't mean I've got a tea set. Why would I ever do that?
I don't know, Ted.
You have to understand, you don't make things just to say you made them. You make things that you use. So if you have gold and you want to create something with the gold, do something with it that is going to be useful. And
well, what do you call making a statue of yourself?
I find that is a representation. You know, if you want to make an issue of that, that's a representation of my family. And
no, the statue of you and your wife and your son, but then you have another one. And
yes, I do.
And it's of you.
Yes, it's a statue of me. What we have is the one, we have the statue of myself and Marcy and Josh, which is up near the front door of the house. And then down the drive, about halfway down the drive, is a statue of me.
What is the statue? Is it just...
It's just me standing, smiling, and I have my hands in my pocket. One leg is extended forward as if I'm just relaxed. And I asked the gentleman when he made this to create it in such a way that I'm greeting someone. I'm saying, I'm Ted Bell. And so the mouth is slightly open as if I'm saying, hi, I'm Ted Bell. But I'm relaxed, My hands are in my pocket. One of the people that floated a rumor, which I thought was the crudest thing and was destructive and very hurtful to the employees at the restaurant, and it was also reprinted in one of the local Beverly Hills papers, which I thought was utterly irresponsible. They said that Ted Bell has a statue of himself made out of gold. The fly is open on his trousers in the statue. Ha, ha, ha. That may be funny if you're in junior high school. It was not funny to me, and it was not funny to my family. And
that's a rumor started by someone, maybe a rival in business, huh?
Well, I don't know, but if I can tell you this, if I find out who started that rumor, and if I find out and I know who the guy is, I will take steps to, at least bring some kind of civil action, because I think that...
Well, did it get public? I didn't hear about it.
No, but it got public in Beverly Hills.
A gold statue you'd had created...
The gold statue of myself... Had the fly, was either the fly was open or
it was the one of you.
The one with me and Marcy and Josh.
The one with you and your wife and kid.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's the thing that really made me angry, that I'm standing there with my fly, excuse me, with my fly open. Can I get, don't put so much pepper in that. I got a, if you don't mind, Phil, I got a Bloody Mary. They put a little too much pepper in it.
And no, you got to relax.
I feel like relax. I got the statue with the fly open, but I really want to talk to you here about this lottery. Is that what you wanted to come up with?
Well, we want to talk to you about, yes, about the proposed changes to the lottery law that you are putting forward, and the story here of a worker in India who won $1 million on one of their local shows. He's a very, very poor man. He's a government worker. He's also a teacher, and he's impoverished.
I've got some very definite ideas on who should win these lotteries and who should not win these lotteries. It's gotten out of hand, and I think we do need to make some changes, yeah. But I wanted to be clear on that statue. The fly, the rumor was that the statue of myself and Marcy and Josh, my pants were open.
That's the rumor.
No, that's what the statue looked. Yes, it's the rumor. And it's tempting to laugh. Okay, go ahead. Get it out of your system. Jesus.
I'm sorry, Ted.
You know, all I ask for is an adult conversation and not this kind of nonsense.
I apologize.
Well, you're doing a lot of apologizing tonight, as well you should.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I don't know who started that rumor. It is very injurious, as Ted said. He is a prominent businessman in Beverly Hills, and he does drive a lot of business to the city, and he employs a lot of people, and a lot of people go to his restaurant. So, yeah, that's. We're going to come back, though, and talk a little bit more about business with Ted Bell tonight, including lotteries. Who wins lotteries, and what happens to that money? Do the people that win lotteries, do they actually benefit the rest of the economy, the rest of society, with what they do with the money? We'll be back to talk about it with Ted Bell here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Beverly Hills, we are a steakhouse, and I'll tell you something, we've got the Kansas City, we've got the New York. I can tell you, if there are any other cities that are named for steaks, we've got those. And Ted's of Beverly Hills. I want to start a Beverly Hills steak, Phil.
You know, I was thinking about that. Why did they call it a Kansas City steak or a New York steak? Why not a Beverly Hills steak?
I'm going to start a Beverly Hills steak, we'll call it the Ted steak. It's a cut, you know, that's what we're talking about. We talk about the Kansas City steak or the New York strip or the New York, the sirloin. It's a cut of meat, and I think that I'd like to name one of our fillets or perhaps a tenderloin. We'll call it the Beverly Hills cut, and we'll have it on the menu. And I bet you anything that it takes off, because the tourist trade loves that kind of thing. And a lot of people, and I do thank you for this, Phil. You've brought a lot of business to our restaurant, which I do very much appreciate, because people hear about our restaurant through a talk show. And I've said this to you before. I'm not telling you anything that isn't, you know, that you don't already know. It's, the clientele tends to be...
middle class?
Well, I wouldn't... I'd say some of it sometimes tends to be lower middle class. And we're happy to have those people. You know, a lot of them, we got to give them a jacket. You know, you're supposed to wear a jacket when you come to my restaurant. That's what you do.
And exactly. And the women... women can wear pants.
Oh, yeah. The women are fine. We don't like to see jeans, but we understand. But the men have got to have a jacket, and I don't mean a bomber jacket. I don't mean a leather jacket. I'm talking about a regular sports jacket, at least. And that's just how it's going to be. I've never changed that rule since I took over the restaurant. That's the one thing I instituted. My father, and I love my father, but the place just had gotten too many bums and slobs coming in. I shouldn't say. Sorry.
All right, well, let's talk here about this.
But you got to wear a jacket. And if you could say that on your show, and you would be telling your listeners that, you'd be telling the people that are listening that.
You mean right now?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind.
Please wear a jacket.
Well, give it some sell, you know.
Okay.
In other words, pretend like this is part of the commercial.
No, I understand that, but we wanted to do an interview.
I know, I want to do the interview, but I'm asking you to include, if you wouldn't mind, a little bit of a sell here for men wearing a jacket in my restaurant so I don't have to deal with as many of these individuals that don't dress good and they listen to your show. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, for those of you who are listening to the show right now, if you go to Ted's of Beverly Hills, I'd appreciate it very much if you are a man. That you wear a jacket.
Whoa, what do you mean if you're a man? I think we know.
Ted, do you want to do an interview here? Or?
Yes, I want to do an interview, but I also pay for airtime on your show, and I'm trying to get it so I got people walking through the door at this place that, you know what I'm saying, they know how to take a napkin and put it in their lap. Nothing fancy.
Are you telling me that you don't like the grade of clientele that you get at your restaurant because of the advertising on my show?
I'm saying that I'd like to have some people that at least know how to put a dinner jacket on. You know what I'm saying? Please don't push me to say what I really think.
Boy, what?
Mr. Holmes.
Yes, David.
Yeah, Philip, just calling. I think that Ted is right.
Well, that's a shock.
Boy, what is that? What kind of a smart-ass comment is that?
Well, every time you call in the middle of him being on the show...
Bill, he's trying to help me out here, okay? I'm trying to just say to give it a little punch, that's all. I'm not trying to mess up your show.
Well, every time you call when he's on, you're backing him up.
He's a sponsor. I'm just saying, if the guy wants you to... What do you want him to do, Mr. Bell? I want him to do just say, when you come to Ted's of Beverly Hills, those of you that are listening out there in Talk Radio Land... Because a lot of you probably don't go to a good, I guess I shouldn't say that, but a lot of you probably don't go to a good restaurant too often. And, yeah, no, it's fine.
Oh, well, what do you mean a lot of you don't go to a good restaurant?
Hold on. Then would you please wear a jacket? You gotta wear a jacket. Otherwise, Ted will not let you in to sit down and eat the steak. Boy. Can you do that?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, listening to the show, he doesn't want me to say if you're a man.
Because the women are going to be insulted. If you're a man, would you wear... If you're a woman, ladies, this isn't for you. Don't wear a sports jacket. What's that mean? Yeah, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. Women are going to... One of the things about women is they don't like being insulted, and they'll go ape all over you if you insult them.
Okay, gentlemen listening, when you go to Ted's of Beverly Hills, if you go to Ted's of Beverly Hills...
Whoa. What is that if? No, you don't say if.
Look, let me just do this so we can get on with the hour, okay? I think I know how to do a commercial pitch.
God. All right, go ahead.
You know, I mean, you guys are...
No. Go ahead. It's all right. I'll hang up. I thought I just wanted to call up and help a sponsor. But if you don't want my help, then you can... Is he gone?
Yeah, he's gone. Ladies and gentlemen, if you go to Ted's of Beverly Hills, would you please wear a sports jacket if you're a man? And I don't care if you're a woman being insulted by the fact that I'm assuming that you don't know this. Women, you don't have to wear sports jackets. Only guys, you need to wear one when you go to Ted's.
Well, that butchered... Boy, did you butcher that. That's all right. No, it's fine.
I butchered it, huh?
Well, yeah. I consider myself to be reasonably intelligent. I don't know what the hell you just said. Well, if you... I'm going to... Now we're at a break, huh?
Yeah, we're at a break. We still haven't gotten to this.
My fault.
We'll be right back at a world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, with Ted Bell on the lottery and who should win it and who shouldn't. And remember to wear a jacket when you go to Ted's. Please.
Yeah, now that was good.
Phil Henry. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Hey, come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. Enjoy the great sporting events. I know the World Series is almost over, but we've got NFL football. That means not for long. If you don't get to Ted's, get a steak into you. Come on. We want to put our meat in your mouth.
By the way, Ted, the Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodies. I forgot to mention those.
When are those? Yeah, I want to know. When are those coming out?
Those are very, very shortly. They're in design now. And very shortly, we're going to have those in our merchandise shop at the Phil Henry website. So,
all right, that's going to be a beautiful thing in time for Christmas. These hoodies, which I know the kids like, because they want to look like they're gangbangers or whatever the hell their problem is. I don't know. But, I don't think that they're gangbangers, but I... you talked me into it, so,
Well, let's not talk about their hoodies, okay? And they have Ted's logo on the front and on the back, your time-honored slogan.
Yeah, we want to put our meat in your mouth is right there on the back so that when you're walking down the street, people will say, wow, I wonder what steakhouse that is. And they'll walk around and say, hello, I just noticed that, you know, the slogan is, and please, Mr. Henry, so many people have made jokes about this.
No, I know.
Please just don't do it. So they'll walk around and they'll say, where is this? Oh, it's Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Don't they, they'll probably go around and say, you want to put your meat in my mouth?
Who said that?
Bud did.
What did I just get done telling you guys?
Bud, shut your mouth.
Well, it's too late now. Oh, boy.
Shut your mouth.
I just got done telling you, don't go kid. Don't go the childish route.
All right, let's talk here about...
Yeah, sure. Let's go ahead and talk about it, yeah. Now that you've wrecked my business.
I doubt it, Ted.
Yeah, really? You know all about the steak business, huh?
No, but I doubt seriously whether this idiot... You keep your mouth shut.
Hold on for a minute. Would you guys shut up in the kitchen, please? I'm on the radio. Tell it. Hey. Oscar. Go ahead.
All right, Ted. In New Delhi, a poor government clerk from a desolate region of eastern India has become the first person ever to win $1 million on an Indian game show. Sushil Kumar's staggering win on the popular Indian version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire has transformed him into a role model for millions of aspiring youth yearning to escape their lives of poverty and find a role in India's burgeoning economy. His win echoes the plot of the 2008 Oscar-winning film Slumdog Millionaire, whose impoverished protagonist won the grand prize on the show. Now, this man and his wife of 4 months, they wept when the Indian movie legend Amitabh Bachchan, the show's host, handed them a check for 50 million rupees, just over $1 million, after the contestant gave all the right answers. And it was quite an emotional moment for them.
Right. And I read about this, and my congratulations go out to this gentleman. He's a government clerk, you said?
Yes, he is. A government clerk and a teacher.
And a teacher. The problem that we have here in the United States, and I don't know whether they have the same problem in India, and I'm going to bypass what you've done to my slogan, we'll just keep talking about this. And
well, you're not exactly bypassing it when you bring it up.
Because it really burns me up. It burns me up when the kid, when I said, don't make a joke out of it, and he did. Anyway, my point is the following thing, Phil. If you win $1 million, you can do a lot of things with $1 million. And there are a lot of things you can do with $1 million that do absolutely nothing for the economy, for the country, for the society that you live in. So if you win your $1 million and you go out and you buy ridiculous things, let's say you win $1 million and you're going out and buying stupid furniture, ridiculous looking paintings. You don't invest. You don't make the money work for you.
Wait. Ridiculous looking paintings. All of those things though go to people that make the paintings. And
well, they go to people that make ridiculous looking paintings and stupid furniture. Yes, it doesn't go to a bank. It doesn't go to a place where the money is going to be used by others to invest in, for instance, the building of homes or the building of businesses. It's not wise. It's not a wise expenditure of money. And what we're looking for is a wise expenditure of money. The money is going to be...
Do you think that a lot of people buy stupid stuff when they win the lottery?
I think that one of the problems we have is that the lottery is generally won by people who are low income. And so that means, doesn't mean they're stupid, but it does mean that they don't have a lot of experience at buying things. And they don't have a lot of experience at purchasing items that are not only beneficial to themselves, but also to the society they live in. For instance, buying an American automobile, going out and purchasing shares in a company that is trying to, something like a green company, something like a company that makes solar power.
Well, you're talking about all of these really touchy-feely, politically correct investments.
No, it doesn't make any difference what it is. I'm talking about maybe touchy-feely.
And well, the whole green thing.
Forget about the green. I'm just saying, purchasing something, stock, or a holding or a position with a company that is actually going to be hiring people. In other words, not buying a lot of velvet dogs playing poker paintings. Do you understand what I'm saying?
And so a lot of kitschy garbage is what you think people of low income buy when they win the that they buy when they win the lottery.
Yes, I think that there's an awful lot of wasteful spending by people that win the lottery. So my point is this: if you are going to enter the lottery and you win, I believe that if it's a state-sponsored lottery like California or something like that, there needs to be some appraisal of your income. I believe there needs to be some question and answer form of some kind that asks, what are you going to do with the money? And I don't think that that is something that, because if you don't, you're going to put this country into even worse shape than it already is. You get people buying stuff that they shouldn't buy. A lot of...
Well, I don't know how much that actually affects the economy. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to Charlie. Hey, Charlie, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Hendry, I'm listening to the gentleman on the radio this evening, and he's talking about poor people and lower-income people purchasing things that are not good for the economy. I dare say I can't think of one thing that you can purchase that is not good for the economy, as long as you're circulating the money, you understand?
That's a good point. But there are a lot of things you can buy that don't help the economy. There are a lot of, for instance, as I just got done saying, if you go out and you buy bad, cheap furniture and dogs playing poker velvet paintings, okay?
I don't know what that is.
Well, it's a kind of a
well, it's sort of this pop art that some people have put in their homes.
Generally, they put it in the basement. But the people that win lotteries, they don't put that in the basement. They put it in their living room.
I don't know what you mean by a dog playing poker. I'm talking about
that a dog isn't playing poker. It's a painting of a dog playing poker.
I'm simply talking about the fact that if you win the lottery, and you're an American citizen, and you spend that money, and no matter where you spend that money, it's good for the economy.
Is that right? What about excuse me for saying this, what about in a brothel?
Oh, don't be ridiculous in a brothel.
Hold on for a minute. Why am I being ridiculous? What if the guy spends it in a brothel or on dog fights?
What does he mean, dog fights?
Okay, so you're saying that a guy that wins $1 million...
If the guy is of a low-income guy, okay? Look what happened with Michael Vick. We found out that low-income people like dog fighting. So you're going to take a guy...
Oh, no, that's very racist. Very racist.
And I'm not talking about racism. I'm talking about guys that don't have money like to bet on dog fights. Okay?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, Michael Vick was black. So what are you saying?
I didn't say anything about him being black. I said that
Michael Vick isn't poor either.
I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about the guys that go out and bet on these dogfights that Michael Vick was sponsoring. That's what I'm talking about.
So you're telling me that a poor man, like this gentleman in India, is going to go lay his money on the line on a dog fight?
Well, no, I wasn't talking specifically about the gentleman in India. I don't know if they have dog fights in India. You know,
they might have dog fights. They might have cobra fights. There could be some.
Well, they could have some kind of an animal fight. You're right. I don't know what kind of animal. But yes, there would be dog fights. It's India. But maybe they have elephant fights. You know.
Well, I doubt if they'd be elephant fights.
What are you talking about here? You're the one that brought up the elephant fights.
No, but you're saying in India, this man who won the lottery could be spending his money on something really stupid, too.
That is exactly right, Phil. Thank you. That is exactly right.
And who is the one that judges whether it's stupid? Because, and allow me to finish my point here. If you don't like something that a man does with his money, it doesn't necessarily mean that it is a bad investment. If a man wants to go out and buy a velvet painting of a dog playing poker, or if he wants to put the money on a dog fight, or if he wants to put his money into a brothel, it ultimately is not it's not your decision.
See, that's where you're wrong, because I believe that we can make it our decision. I believe that we can enforce who gets to win lotteries by way of law, so that we don't have some guy that's going to run right out with his $1 million in earnings and lay it all on the line in a dogfight. I just don't think...
I think it's asinine, Mr. Henry, to think that that happens.
Well, I think it's asinine to think that it happens to the extent that it affects the economy.
Well, how do you know? Who is the guy? Sir, with all due respect, who are you?
Who am I? I'm a businessman. I live out here in America like everyone else. Who are you?
Well, who am I? I'm Ted Bell. All right? I'm Ted Bell.
That's fine.
Well, what do you mean that's fine? I'm Ted Bell.
I don't know who Ted Bell is.
Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from Philadelphia.
You're calling from Philadelphia. All right. Well, I'm Ted Bell, all right?
And well, he owns a restaurant in Beverly Hills.
I don't know the restaurant, okay?
Do you eat steak?
Yes, I love steak.
All right, if you eat steak, have you eaten steak in a restaurant?
Yes, of course.
All right, I'm Ted Bell.
I don't know who you are.
You know, I think you're lying, because if you eat steak in a restaurant, I think you're lying.
I haven't been called a liar in a long time. I'm telling you that if a man wins money in a lottery, he has the right to put that money into anything he wants, including a brothel, or including a dog fight, or including whatever it is that you're saying.
What I'm saying right now is I'm Ted Bell, and you're telling me you've never heard of me.
You're going to have to let that one go, Ted.
Who's talking?
Phil Hendry, the host.
Oh, sorry. What do you mean I got to let it go? I'm Ted Bell. You asked me who I was. Did you ask me that?
Yes, I did.
I'm Ted Bell.
You're Ted Bell, and he doesn't know who you are.
Lionel.
Thank you very much, Mr. Henry, for your great show, and I will hang up now because I don't want to talk any further to this jackass. Thank you, and good night.
Did you edit that out, please?
Edit out what?
The fact that he called me a jackass?
No, we didn't.
What an embarrassment.
Well, Ted, look.
You didn't edit that out?
No, we did not. I mean, I it wasn't profane.
He called me an idiot. He called me a jackass, I guess.
I understand that, but here's the thing. When you say to a guy repeatedly, I'm Ted Bell, and he doesn't know who you are, I think you're going to have to just move on, okay?
No, he knows who I am. If you eat steak in this country, if you put meat in your mouth, you know who I am. All right? Because if you do that, my name comes to mind. And if that kid that works for you tries to make a joke out of that...
All right, I understand. Do you still hold to the opinion that a low-income person winning the lottery or winning any other large cash prize is going to put that money into ridiculous or even illegal things?
I believe the level of judgment there is not as good as that which would attend someone of a higher earning capability and a higher, if you will, class in society. Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Have you ever in your life bet on a... illegal, and have you ever bet in an illegal gambling enterprise?
What is that supposed to be?
Have you ever been in a poker game? Or
of course I have.
All right, and you know that those are illegal for the most part in the state of California.
Oh, give me a break, will you? I'm not talking about. What are you talking about?
I'm saying that a man is going to do what a man's going to do with his money, and not everybody, including you, puts his money into things that are legal.
A poker game? That's not the same as dogfights. You're going to win some real serious money in a dogfight.
Poker doesn't have serious money.
Yeah,
not the kind of money, not the kind of cabbage you're going to pull down in a dogfight. I only wish dogfights were legal. You can pull in decent money in a poker game if you get in the right game. But a dogfight, you don't get it. You know, you just don't get it.
Well, how do you know about dogfights?
Because, all right, I bet on one once. One time, just to see what it was about.
You bet on a dogfight?
Yes, I did. And I know I don't hate dogs, and know I don't want to see dogs get hurt, but I do like money. And I had to balance whether I like to see dogs get hurt with the fact that I like money, and it came out that I like, you know, money more than seeing a dog get hurt. So, I mean, I don't like to see a dog get hurt, but I like money more than not seeing the dog get hurt. In other words, what I'm saying is...
All right, hold on, Ted. 877-876-PHIL. We have to take a break. Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills with us talking about who should be winning lotteries, if anybody. Who should win the lottery? Who should win cash prizes? If you don't know what you're doing with your money, then why should we give you any more, even if you win it in a lottery? The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills and enjoy a class evening out. And bring your girlfriend, bring your wife, and enjoy real class. Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Here at Ted's.
And remember,
you wanna put our meat in your mouth.
Who did that?
I'm sorry, that was my fault. I pulled the music down.
What is it with you guys that you can't get anything right over there tonight? What is it?
I'm sorry, we'll play it again, Ted, okay?
Oh yeah, sure, play it again. I led into it, I said... And remember, and then you were going to hear the slug line, we want to put our meat in your mouth, and you blew it. You blew it.
You're right. I...
You're getting this. All right. The second thing I want to say here, God almighty, you know what, Phil? I'm glad I sponsor your show, but...
You know, you've had a lot of complaints, and I understand technically we haven't handled things right, but you have not yet made it very clear to me and to my listeners how it is a man who is poor is not allowed to enter a lottery. You say he spends his money on ridiculous things like velvet dog poker playing paintings, bad furniture, and now what is this you passed? This is a message to Bud.
Yeah, this is. I want to hear that music, cut 3, tape 2, reel 9. You got that, Dickman?
Yeah, cut 3, tape 2, reel 9.
Yeah. Now, when you guys start talking about dog fighting, I want to make it very clear. What did I just? I just started talking about dog fighting. Should do it.
That was a cue.
Oh, sorry.
When you guys start talking about dog fighting, I want to make it very clear. Yeah, there you go. That's not me. This is not me. Here, this is dog fight music.
All right, let me get Brad Rifkin on the line here from Rifkin Advertising in Las Vegas. Brad is also in the advertising game, Ted, and we've been talking awful lot about that.
Hold on.
Snake for a necktie.
Yeah.
Got a brand new house on the roadside.
And I love to watch dogs fight.
I got a brand new.
All right, who is the guy?
Hey, Brad. Brad, how you doing?
I'm good, Phil. How are you?
I'm great. This is Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Yes, Mr. Bell. How are you? I'm very pleased to meet you.
Ted Bell.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Brad, why don't you tell Ted what you were saying?
Well, I've been in advertising a long time, Mr. Bell. I'm very familiar with your restaurant, and I'm very familiar with the work that you do.
So if I say to you, I'm Ted Bell, you know who I am?
I absolutely know who you are, yes, sir.
All right.
But I don't think you're looking at this the right way. If a man wants to spend his money on a dogfight, he's entering into an illegal enterprise, obviously. So that money is going over to other people that use it for illegal purposes, and that money is lost. That money is lost. But if you look at the country, the United States of America, you could see that were that the case, then the country itself would be in much, much worse shape. But the fact is that people have invested over the many, many years of the history of this country in legitimate enterprise, legitimate business, and that is what's made the country grow. So I don't think you're looking at it historically the right way.
Well, I know you're saying a lot. You're making a lot of noise, but you're not making any sense. What do you mean historically the right way? All I know is that if
who do you love?
See this? Yeah, I know you think that's dogfighting music.
Who do you love?
I wanted to talk about dogfighting, so I want this.
Ali took me by my.
All right, when these guys are investing their money in dogfighting, this is what you hear. When you want to invest your money in something that's classy, this is what you hear. Okay. Right. Okay. And what if you want to invest in my business, which is the advertising business? What do you hear then? All right. Well, then you'd hear this. You'd hear this. Okay. See this? What's that supposed to mean? Well, I think you know. No, I don't. I don't know what that means.
What does that mean, Ted?
Well, do I got to spell it out?
Sometimes I feel like
I want to walk away. In other words, you're trying to say that I'm involved in some. I'm telling you that the business you're in is not what I call, a manly enterprise. But you went to an advertising agency to get.
That's right. It's the end of the hour. We'll be back with Margaret Gray on the Phil Henry Show.
Wait a minute. What happened to the hour that I'm sponsoring? I'm Ted Bell.
Phil Henry.
Ted Bell.
Broadcasting from the shores of Bell Pacifico, Phil Henry.
It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. In our affiliate spotlight, by the way, tonight, we were remiss in our first hour. I want to mention KERN in Bakersfield, California, Kern. KERN is in Kern County. And KCPS in Burlington, Iowa, two great stations on the Phil Henry Radio Network. And we're also online at philhenryshow.com, which if you're watching us on Phil TV and HD, that's exactly what you're looking at. And if you are watching us on Phil TV and HD, then you obviously already have a backstage pass. If you don't have a backstage pass, come on over and join us. We have live streaming video of our show every night. We have thousands of hours of archived downloadable material. We have many generations of the Phil Henry Show and many different kinds of radio that we have done throughout the years. And we also have our character clips. And we also have our other video presentations, such as the pilots, the TV pilots we've done, TV things that we've done. Interviews, and much, much more. Our classic Phil, which is free, is also can be subscribed to through our website. So head over to philhenryshow.com and get a backstage pass. You can also win an opportunity at a free month of listening. That's right. If you'd like to check out what it's all about for free, see if you can't win yourself a free month by entering our drawing. And here's how you enter our drawing for a free month of Phil. You just go over to our fan page at Facebook, which is facebook.com/PhilHenryFans, PHANS, and like the page. If you've already liked the page in the past, you can go over to twitter.com/PhilHenryShow. So we're on Twitter at twitter.com/PhilHenryShow, and hashtag PHS, hashtag PHS at twitter.com/PhilHenryShow. Two ways to enter our drawing, which is going to happen, I think, Monday. And somebody's going to win the first ever free month.
We're going to give away every month, right?
We're giving it away every month, a free month every month, to a lucky, 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 so lucky person. All right. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're going to bring on Margaret Gray here in just a moment, who writes the nationally syndicated column A Little Bird Told Me. And this is a very interesting story she's going to talk about. In Chandler, Arizona, Aaron Carr Jordan, who is a college professor and is a mom, she got a very surprising letter this week, very, very early in the morning. It was 7 o'clock in the morning, as a matter of fact, when she got a hand-delivered letter. And what Mrs. Jordan got was a letter from a lawyer. And the lawyer was representing McDonald's. And the lawyer handed her a letter from McDonald's that said, "We don't want you anywhere near our restaurants, if you don't mind there." In Chandler, Arizona, there are 8 specific McDonald's restaurants there in the Gilbert, Chandler, Phoenix area that she's not allowed to set foot in. She's not allowed to be around. And what's the reason for that? Because they feel that her appearances there, her behavior there, is disruptive. We're going to get a little bit more on this story from Margaret Gray, who has been following it. And, Margaret, I understand, first of all, thanks for being with us.
I'm very happy to be on, Phil.
I understand you're a fan of this woman.
Phil, I'm telling you that Erin Carr Jordan is what every woman, I think what every woman would like to be, and that is a woman who is constantly vigilant and constantly on the lookout for what is absolutely the very best thing for their children. She's doing the work of a lot of women right now, and we must, I really think, Phil, we must give her our support.
What is she doing?
Well, what she's doing is she is attempting to get the people at McDonald's in the Phoenix and Gilbert and, I'm trying to see this, if you can read that.
Phoenix and
Chandler. I don't know Chandler.
Chandler.
She's trying to get 8 specific McDonald's restaurants to show some responsibility, Phil, and to show that they have the well-being of their very young customers at heart. She has been into these different McDonald's, and she's been to the play places. Now, are you aware of what these play places are?
Yeah, these are the areas at McDonald's where the children play.
Yeah, primarily preschoolers, or they can also be very young elementary school children, I think. But these are areas outside of McDonald's at these restaurants that children are playing in. Now, given the fact that children are playing in these areas, what do you think you're going to have? You're going to have a lot of bacteria. You're going to have a lot of these viruses that children transmit between each other. You're going to have a lot of very unsanitary conditions. And when you factor in, and I don't want to sound like Ted Bell because I just heard the segment you did before me, and I believe me, Phil, I'm not classist and I'm not an individual who believes that I don't believe in the stratification of society and so on and so forth. But you do have to factor in that there are a lot of children coming into these McDonald's restaurants from areas outside of the central metropolitan area of a McDonald's. And do you know what I mean by that?
No, I don't.
Each McDonald's has its own metropolitan core. In other words, each McDonald's that we have in America, because of the popularity of the restaurant, is in and of itself a center of commerce, a center of socialization. They are that important, Phil, the McDonald's restaurants, to American, sort of
daily rhythm?
Well, the daily business of our lives. And not daily rhythm. I wouldn't use that word.
All right, daily business, that's a good word.
Thank you. They are very important, and so they are metropolitan. When you take in the surrounding areas of a McDonald's, those become the suburban areas. Now, what we have with a lot of McDonald's, we have restaurants that are attracting children from outlying areas. That is, areas beyond the metropolitan reach of any single McDonald's. They are children, therefore, Phil, that are coming in from rural areas. Now, they're not really rural, but to the McDonald's, they're rural. Do you understand? So let's say a young child is coming from the inner city to a McDonald's in a suburban area. If that child is not organic to the metropolitan area of the McDonald's, the child is rural.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, so every McDonald's restaurant
is in and of itself the metropolitan core of wherever it is.
Is the metropolitan core of wherever it is, meaning that McDonald's restaurant has, by virtue of its existence...
Yes, has created a metropolitan business rhythm around it and in it. And either you come from there or you don't. And if you are, and to use the terminology of the day, if you're shagging in from the sticks, you know, if you're coming in from the rural areas with your children, you're bringing diseases that are unknown to that metropolitan core. And that's what Erin Carr Jordan's work has been all about. She's trying to identify a lot of these diseases that are exotic to the metropolitan core. Where she lives and where her children live, they don't have things like ringworm. They don't have head lice. That is something that is brought in from the ruralization, from the farmland.
You're talking about farmland. A moment ago you were saying inner city.
I am talking about inner city, but because it's beyond the metropolitan core, it might as well be farmland. You understand what I'm saying?
Not really. I mean...
Bill, it's very easy. I'm saying...
Captain speaking.
I'm speaking English, Frank. I'm saying, Phil, anything that is beyond the metropolitan core of any McDonald's is the sticks.
Okay, so if a kid comes in, even if he's from the inner city, and he goes to a metropolitan... Not metropolitan.
If he goes to a McDonald's that's in the suburbs, he's in from the sticks. He's in from hillbilly land. And he's bringing his headlights with him.
Yeah, that's the point.
And he's bringing his headlights with him. What is she finding out? I understand...
Phil, don't get impatient, because there's a lot more. I've got a lot more to explain.
Well, we need to kind of get to the core. Speaking of getting to the metropolitan core, you know, we need to get to the metropolitan core of the subject. You know. Margaret?
Yeah, no, I heard you, and, look, I don't know any other way to say this. I know I'm on the air. Don't make me angry tonight, Phil.
I'm not trying to, Margaret.
I am very, very dedicated to this woman and her work. Please don't do it. Please don't make me angry. Please.
I can vouch for that, Phil, when he gets back.
I'll talk, Frank, not you. So what we're talking about is Aaron Carr Jordan's work.
All right. And I know that we have some audio of Ms. Carr Jordan, and I would at this time like to get some of that audio up and running here, because there's some statements that she's made to the press, so on and so forth, and some things that might be illustrative, if you will, of what it is she's trying to say. Now, this McDonald's, which is located there in Chandler or Gilbert, here is Dr. Carr Jordan. She says she's found disgusting things that can make your kids sick in McDonald's playlands. Dirt, grime.
And fecal matter. That is very, very important. She has found excrement. Are you hearing what I'm saying? Are you listening to what I'm saying?
Yes, I am. But Ms. Gray, that is something which is another matter entirely, because they find that everywhere, you know. And
well, I can tell you this. You won't find that in my home. How? What does that mean, they find that everywhere?
They do. They find it. They'll find it in our house.
And where are they going to find fecal matter at our house?
Smeared on walls, smeared everywhere.
Oh, for God's... You are absolutely vile. And, Mr. Henry, I know what you're referring to. This has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
All right, I will take your word for it.
Thank you, because I came on as the expert guest.
I understand that. Here is Dr. Carr Jordan, Dr. Aaron Carr Jordan. She speaks of finding dirt, grime, rotting food, clumps of hair, sweat, swear words, graffiti, equipment in disrepair, broken windows, slides with gashes. I don't know. I'm reading a really big setup here. I'll bet you anything that's exactly what she says. So here she is, Dr. Aaron Carr Jordan.
We found stuff that can make your kids very, very sick. We found dirt and
grime
and
rotting food
and
clumps of hair,
swear words
good
all
God.
Over the place. Graffiti,
that's just what you said.
Equipment in disrepair that's broken, second story windows that are busted out, slides that have large gashes in them. You name it. If it's a thing you don't want your child being exposed to, we found it inside these playlands.
That's one thing that I had told the guys that prepare the audio, and I guess they forgot, or that you don't have to transcribe it for me, you know.
What you just said is what she just said. So what's the point of you talking or her talking?
I understand. Here she is again, and I won't say anything, and here she is saying some stuff. How about that?
When I went in and repeatedly found that they weren't making corrective changes, I happened to have a longtime friend and colleague who specializes in microbiology and immunology, Dr. Furr, and I reached out to her and said,
Furr,
you know, can
I
this
know,
make
I
kids sick,
Furr.
And what do I need to do to find
and,
out?
So hold on, I can't hear anything.
We made some
phone
calls,
but I know,
I enlisted
Furr.
The help
Great.
Of a lab, and we started swabbing. We found several strains of opportunistic pathogens, in other words, things that can cause infection or disease. We found stuff that causes meningitis, foodborne illness, skin, hair, eye infections. Again, Bacillus cereus, Staphylococcus, fecal contamination, quite a few things, coliforms that can make children very, very ill, several of which are multi-drug resistant and potentially fatal.
That was two pieces of audio. Your comment?
Well, I think Dr. Carr Jordan is alerting mothers everywhere that when you take your children to these common play station, not PlayStation, home and play areas, and you let your children loose into this. It is a wonderland of filth, Phil. It is an amazing, almost a magical place of bacteria, and you heard what she said, pathogens and all of those words. The one thing that does bother me about her is she thinks she's, obviously thinks she's special with the other pathogens. She sounds like she thinks she's special, but I really believe in her. And when you let your children loose in a McDonald's play area, you're letting that child loose in a panorama and a wonderland of disease and rash and dripping sores. And
God almighty.
That's right, Phil. Read it and weep. Read it and weep, as they say in poker.
You know.
Because I've heard you guys play poker.
All right, we're going to take a break here as Margaret Gray continues to talk with us. And you heard the audio there from Dr. Aaron Carr Jordan. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll continue talking about how safe are these play areas for your kids on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
A wonderland of drip.
Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. And on the line with me is Margaret Gray from the nationally syndicated column A Little Bird Told Me. We're talking to her about this work or this alert, or if you will, this controversy in Arizona, started by Dr. Carr Jordan, Aaron Carr Jordan. She is Margaret. Where is this woman from? What are her credentials?
Currently, Phil, she's on faculty, I think, at Mesa College. She's also on faculty at the University of Phoenix and one other school. She was at Arizona State, and she's very eminent, I think, in her own way. But I don't think you need to have a great deal of I don't think you need to have a big long resume, as my son says, Jason J. Delmonico. He says, you don't need a big long resume, Mom. And he's right about this. I think what we're talking about are our children and where they play. Now, I had taken a series of promotional pictures for Little Bird Told Me and a children's contest that we were having, a children's art contest. Now, for fun, I went over to a local Chuck E. Cheese and I sat in the little ball bin that they have. And if you've ever seen this film...
Yeah, it's a big play area.
Yes, it's a big play area where the children jump into the ball. I sat in the ball bin, and then I began to feel very uncomfortable because I realized, my God, I'm sitting in this area on balls, and children have been here. There is no doubt that they most likely have urinated. There is absolutely no doubt at all that some saliva has been smeared, and my God, I remember feeling sick. And Frank, you tell the rest of the story because I am very...
All right. Well, he got in the ball bin. He got out of the ball bin and began to walk. Gets outside, and there's a producer, and I know the guy by the name of Jeff Wimcock. She's a producer over here at Vestley, which is a production house, and recognized Margaret and asked him if he wanted to be in a Western. And
what's this got to do with the ball bin?
Hold on. I was going to say hold your horses, but I don't want to see. And he'd been walking bow-legged and with his arms out over to his side because he was infected.
Yeah. I walked out of the restaurant with my arms away from my body and my legs spread. And I just was sort of walking almost robotic because I didn't want any of this stench to rub off anymore on me. This smartass by the name of, what's his name?
The producer.
Some producer said, have you ever been in a Western? Because obviously I was walking.
Maybe he was walking bow-legged.
I wasn't walking bow-legged. And I heard the joke last night on your show, Mr. Hendry, from this retard that you got working for you. And
retard?
Yes, that is the French pronunciation and is acceptable if you use the French pronunciation.
Are you talking about Bud?
Yes, Bud Dickman, the retard. He said that I walked bull-legged, and he was making some sexual joke.
I didn't make a joke about it at all. I don't even remember.
He doesn't even remember. But get to the point here.
The point is, I had sat down in the ball pit at Chuck E. Cheese. Is there anywhere on earth that is more rife, that is more teeming with deadly bacteria than the ball pit at Chuck E. Cheese? Is there?
All right.
Is there?
Give her a chance.
I'm giving her a chance.
I don't know, Margaret, if there is or not. But I will tell you this. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
No, oh, that's funny. Get to the bottom of what? The ball pit? I've already been to the bottom of it. And let me tell you something. It is slimed with children's loogie.
All right, we're going to get to the bottom of whatever it is you're talking about, because now you're way off into something else. You were talking about Erin Carr Jordan.
I am still talking about her.
Well, you're talking about the ball pit at Chuck E. Cheese. Now, that's a whole other thing. And I don't want Chuck E. Cheese getting mad at me. And I don't want to start rumors where we don't start rumors. You understand?
No, I am not starting a rumor.
You're giving an opinion. You're not a doctor. Dr. Carr Jordan hasn't been over to Chuck E. Cheese. Maybe she will. I don't know.
I would suggest that she goes to Chuck E. Cheese, because I got out of the ball pit, and I was imagining every child that had been in that ball pit purposefully licking and loogieing on the balls just in the hopes that an adult sat down in the ball pit. And
to get her picture taken.
It was a publicity shot. What is that? Is that music?
Hold on. We're going to be right back with Margaret Gray. And I guess Frank is there, too, as we talk about Dr. Erin Carr Jordan and the bacteria at McDonald's and the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Henry.
I wasn't walking bull-legged.
That's what she thought.
Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL is the number here in the world-famous Phil Henry Show, talking with Margaret Gray about the news story out of Arizona. And this is Erin Carr Jordan. You know, we're giving this lady, I'd never heard of her, but that's her name. And Ms. Gray, you've heard of her. And
I have heard of Erin Carr Jordan through this work, Phil, and I think it's outstanding. She's doing the children a great deal of good.
I know that. I'm just very wary of you bringing Chuck E. Cheese into it. When you talk about the ball pit and the loogie and saliva, and you're walking like a cowboy or something.
I was not walking. You know something, Frank? I, as God is my witness, I should hurt you for what you've done.
I didn't do anything. I brought up the fact that they...
I was approached by this smart-ass producer who worked over at CBS Laurel and said, would you like to be in a rodeo movie? And I said, why? He said, because you could drive a... He said, you could put probably 3 horses between my legs. And I said, you have got to be kidding me. And I almost kicked him between his legs. And I was wearing very pointed high heels. And
well, what was going on? I don't understand. Why was he giving you this hard time?
Oh, my... Are you listening to me? I said I got out of the ball pit.
I heard you say that you'd been in this ball pit at Chuck E. Cheese, and it was rife with bacteria, which I don't know how you know that.
I'm a mother, Phil. For God's sake, I'm a mother. I'm not a doctor. You're right.
You're not a doctor. You're not a bacteriologist. You're none of those things. You're a mother. That's fine. But you are not qualified to say what may or may not be there. And on top of that, you're mentioning this a business, and I would rather that you not do that.
All right, I was at this fictitious place that has a ball pit, and they serve pizza, and...
Okay, Margaret, you know, grow up.
I won't be spoken to like that.
Well, then please grow up and understand that we have laws in this country that protect businesses, even well-known businesses, from speaking untruths about them.
And how do you know I'm speaking an untruth?
Because you are not qualified to say whether something has disease in it.
All right, then I will tell you what I am qualified to say, and that's what my experience was.
Okay, fine.
I got out of the ball pit, and I felt unsanitary. So I walked with my arms out and my legs spread. Now, no, that doesn't mean that I was walking like a slut. It doesn't mean like I was walking as if I had a suppository. And I'm not yelling that because I don't want people to hear me.
Well, they can turn their radio up. I don't know why you're whispering. It doesn't work that way in radio, but anyway.
Excuse me, Phil, but I'm a lady, all right? So I wasn't walking with my legs spread as if but a suppository.
I understand.
All right. I was walking because I could just feel, maybe it was psychological, but I could feel the filth and the drip-causing bacteria that would be in that ball pit.
The drip-causing bacteria. Now, that's a decidedly, I would say, adult disease.
Yes, it is.
Then why would that be present in a child's ball pit?
I don't know, Phil, but I'm telling you, I wouldn't put it past any ball pit that you want to talk about at any supposed child's restaurant to have every manner of disease. I could tell you that it would not shock me, and doctors have done preliminary work on this. You could get leprosy. And
no, you see, that once again, you don't know that that's true.
I'm imagining that one could go into the ball pit at a kid's restaurant, and within weeks, you've got a nose that's, well, you don't want me to say it, so.
He's trying to say your nose is going to come off.
That's the most asinine thing I've ever heard in my life.
You know what leprosy is.
Yeah, of course I know what leprosy is, and you're not going to get it from a ball pit. I'd like to bring on the show right now, if you don't mind, Margaret. I want to bring on another guest.
My understanding was that I was the only guest.
This is a gentleman who's called in, but we know who he is because he's been on our program before. He's Dr. Jim Sadler from San Diego. He joins us on our newsmaker line. We give him the back line. Dr. Sadler, how are you this evening, sir?
I'm very well, Phil. Thank you.
And you've been listening to our broadcast with Ms. Gray?
Yes. Good evening, Ms. Gray.
Good evening.
And what are your feelings?
Well, I like yourself, Phil. I feel that there's probably an awful lot of very preliminary and unnecessary conjecture. I agree with Ms. Gray that wherever children gather in large numbers, there's a great potential for there to be infectious or diseases or infections that are transmissible between children. I don't know what she was talking about when she said the metropolitan area and kids are bringing head lice in from the rural areas.
I meant that there are children bringing head lice into areas where there isn't head lice.
Well, you know, let's talk about this head lice thing.
Fine, because I enjoy discussing these things. This is very important.
You enjoy talking about head lice. When it comes to the well-being of the children, of course I do. And may I ask another question?
No, you may not, because I know it's going to be about my speech impediment, and I don't want to answer questions about that.
Fine.
Thank you, Doctor, for saying that. I don't think you should have to. Go ahead.
The idea that head lice is somehow brought in from outlying areas is ridiculous, because this is something children get. You can pick it up from dirt, soil, and so forth. That is present in many other areas where a kid goes to school. Myself, speaking of school, Phil, I was educated at a college, and I also went to a high school. And I have formal education, but I was born and I was raised very poor, and it sometimes comes out in my speech. You noticed I had a grammatical stumble there. But more importantly, I'm familiar with the diseases that children will get. Impetigo, for instance, which is
Oh, God, that is disgusting.
Well, it is Wow.
We're talking about little kids now.
I understand. Jason J. Delmonico got it, and it was a large oozing. Have you ever seen...
All right, don't go into specifics, all right?
It's very, very disgusting, and we ought to pity the children that get that, not talk about how disgusting it is. And
no, I understand that, but when you have a child come into your home, as I've had come into my home, and the child has a big, huge ringworm gash on her face, am I supposed to serve her at the same table with the other children, Doctor?
Ms. Gray, I would say that if you have a child in your home with a very large, as you say, ringworm rash on her face, I would send her home with the suggestion that the mother or father or whoever the responsible adult is immediately get in touch with a doctor. I'm sorry, say that again. I said I would send the child home with a suggestion to the mother or the father or whoever the responsible adult is to immediately get in touch with a doctor. One more time.
Okay, now, I know what you're doing, Ms. Gray, and you can hear what he's saying.
I'm sorry. Is she screwing with me? Is that what's going on?
Yes, sir. Okay, well, he hung up. Yes, he's hung up his phone. So, in other words, Ms. Gray, one would have to ask this question at this juncture. Are you serious coming on this program and talking about Dr. Carr, or is this just one big silly-ass diversion for you?
Am I serious about coming on your show and doing what?
Ms. Gray, you were messing around with Dr. Sadler's speech impediment.
Well, I wanted to hear him. The man couldn't say something, and I wanted him to restate it.
Yeah, because you wanted to make fun of him. Now, are you serious?
I am, both, sir. I'm talking about the well-being of children, Mr. Hendry. Now, I have told you that I am in fear that if I step into a ball pit somewhere, and you know the kind I'm talking about, and I come out of that ball pit walking like...
Walking like a cowboy.
My God, you're laughing now, and that's the very thing you told me not to do.
It's pretty funny.
It is not...
All right, if you come out of the ball pit...
If I come out of that ball pit walking like Tom Mix, okay? And...
Who's she?
Tom Mix was a cowboy in the movies. That's not because I want to jump on a horse and I want to rope a steer. It's because, Phil, I feel that I have become, to use the phrase that children use, and it is one that child psychologists use, that I have been loogied and that I am at risk. Now, you can talk to Dr. Carr Jordan, and you can also get that Sadler back on the line. I don't care. Both of them will tell you that you're at risk if you've been loogied or if you have hit a ball pit, and they don't mention restaurants.
Well, we're way off of McDonald's. I thought you wanted to talk about McDonald's.
I do want to talk about McDonald's, and I know you have other audio to play.
That's what I think I'd like to do, is play other audio, because I'm not getting anywhere with you. And
I have been interrupted constantly. Every time I make a point, I am being criticized.
But that's because you're making some very specific scientific points that I find to be very hard to believe, and that's why I want to stop you there. You don't have the credentials to make those statements. Here is now, this is Dr. Carr Jordan. She said that the statement from McDonald's was not enough.
McDonald's has put out a statement, and we want to make sure we have a chance to read it today. They say, quote, "We put our customers first and are taking these concerns very seriously. We've spoken with Dr. Carr Jordan and assigned a team to review the report findings and our own existing procedures." And they also say that while they've had stringent sanitizing procedures for weekly, daily, and even spot training, cleaning rather, we're always looking for ways to improve our standards and how they are followed at each restaurant.
Now, what's wrong with that?
Well, you have to play the other piece of sound, because Dr. Carr Jordan then gives us her scientific and eminently qualified opinion that McDonald's is playing a game. McDonald's is playing a little hide-and-seek, and they're playing a little you-know-what to the gherkin, you know?
All right. Here is Dr. Carr Jordan's other statement, you-know-what to the gherkin. Here it is.
I don't think it's an actual response. I think it's a statement, which really isn't the same thing, because they've taken no corrective changes. They haven't implemented any new policy. And so I'm aware of that statement. I have spoken with them, and I keep saying to them, how's that reviewing process going, and when do you plan on making actual changes? And without their policy actually being translucent, we're not even sure what the policy actually is. I know that it doesn't have any specific items related to disinfecting, and just to say you spot clean isn't enough, because it doesn't identify what that actually means. And the results that I'm getting consistently across the board from McDonald's and from the other establishments that I've been to indicate that they are not being cleaned. The levels are so high that that's just not true. So there's either no incentive for them to clean them, or they're just not being cleaned.
That's Dr. Carr Jordan, and she is pretty much, first of all, very long-winded and basically saying that McDonald's is doing it all wrong and they haven't done what they say they're doing. And she sounds like she likes to hear herself talk.
Well, Phil, with all due respect, you sound like you like to hear yourself talk, too. I think there's a lot of people that like to hear themselves talk. I think when Dr. Carr Jordan speaks, a great many very wise and wonderful things come out. Now, I do agree, because I've been in the media for a long time. She sounds like she wants a career. What I find suspicious about her is she sounds as if she wants a career as a Fox News contributor, because she's da-da-da-da-da-da, and she has that cadence, which I find very obnoxious. And if I find out that she's actually bringing all of this up just so she can get a shot with Shepard Smith, I'm going to be very, very disappointed. Because that takes her to a different level. She no longer cares about children. Now she's just another woman that will show it all, lift her skirt up if she has to. And
all right, I understand what you're saying. Let me get to a phone call here. Lloyd in Alhambra, California. Go ahead, Lloyd. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask the lady who is on your program now.
What did he say? Is it the lady? How now?
How now, brown cow.
Oh, I didn't say how now, brown cow. I said I want to know from the lady.
You didn't call me. He didn't call me a cow.
I don't know.
No, he did not.
I did not call you a cow, ma'am, if you'll listen to what I'm saying. My name is Lloyd Bonafide. I'm calling from Alhambra.
Mr. Henry already said that.
Well, I'm saying it again. And I have a grandson who I'm very concerned with, and we love to take him to the ball area. And we have put him in there and taken pictures of him, and he plays with his friends. And I have gone now I'm looking at this movie called Hair, and a girl just took her brassiere off, so I've got to go. The pig...
What happened to him?
Where is he, bud?
He hung up. I guess he saw a nude scene.
He saw a nude scene and he hung up. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. 877-876-PHIL. All right, well, look, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with the final segment with Margaret Gray and, of course, with her husband, Frank, and your calls at 877-876-PHIL on how hygienic, how safe, how clean is McDonald's play areas on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL is our number. We have Margaret Gray here for a final segment as we discuss a doctor in Phoenix. She's an Arizona mother, as she was described, and we're giving her quite a bit of credibility here as some kind of a scientist. I don't know that we should be doing that, Margaret. Because she is a professor in college, and yes, she has a doctorate. I don't know what her doctorate's in, I don't believe it says in this article at all. She is an educator, and all of this is very well and good, but again, we have a primarily a mother who is making all of these statements, you know.
Well, do you deny that the average play area at a McDonald's is rife with crawling disease? Do you agree with that? Do you agree that it's rife with crawling drip? And you don't like that?
No, I don't like that word. That's an adult disease.
All right. Do you agree that the average play area at McDonald's is crawling with infectious ringworm?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Because I don't know that that's been established.
I just got done telling you that you don't think she's a scientist, huh?
I think that she is a woman who's attracted attention. That's fine. She's a doctor. That's fine. She's an educator. That's fine. And I think there's a very valuable statement to be made that wherever children congregate and wherever children have their hands on objects in a public, like a public play area, yes, there's a case to be made about keeping those areas as clean as we possibly can, because the kids are going to get, we know now, the different diseases and viruses the kids can get. Beyond that, though, I don't know that her findings, where she says that, oh, well, they found this and they found that and I tested it for that and there's a pathogen and blah, 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 I don't know that this woman is qualified.
Well, Phil, on the one hand, you say, yes, that we should be very clean. On the other hand, when I tell you that I'm literally walking bow-legged out of a ball pit, you're laughing.
And because some guy stopped you and wanted to offer you a movie and a part in a cowboy movie.
So you automatically assume I'm walking like I could fit three wild stallions between my knees. That is insulting to any woman.
I never said that. Okay.
What a jackass.
Well, you're the one that brought it up. You said that you were walking out of the ball pit, and
I didn't walk out of the ball pit. I had to be helped out of that ball pit. That's how disgusted I was. That's how weak I'd become from the thought of it. And again, I will tell you this. Let's talk about McDonald's. Let's talk about those little tunnels that children crawl through. If you get fully loogied in a tunnel like that, and
boy, there you are with these childish terms like fully loogied. That's not even a scientific term. You know,
excuse me, yes it is. It's used by a great many doctors and scientists because they want to use a common language, a colloquial language that the doctors can communicate with the community at large with. So, and a great many diseases are named after. There's a disease that was named after a boy in the 50s. It's a rash that you get, I think, either in the armpit. Frank, you saw me reading about it.
I think it's a scalp rash.
It's a scalp rash. It's called, I think it's called Billy's what?
It's called Billy Rash or Billy's Bad Day.
That was it, Billy's Bad Day. And
what the hell is it called?
It's called Billy, the rash is called Billy's Bad Day.
Billy's Bad Day, what does that mean?
What do you mean, what does that mean? It's a rash, it's an impetigo rash.
No, but why is it called Billy's Bad Day?
Because a kid named Billy got it in the 50s at a school somewhere, and it was a bad day for him.
That's the you know what, I find that hard to believe.
Oh my God, you're calling me a liar again.
877-877-876-PHIL. Lloyd is called back, sir. I guess you were finished watching your TV show. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. I apologize, but I saw they were watching the television.
Well, I heard you say you saw a woman's breast.
Yes, I... Oh, now I'm looking at ass. Never mind.
Where'd he go? Hello?
Did he hang up again?
Yeah, he said he saw a butt.
I'm looking at ass right now.
Get out of here, all of you people. Phil Hendry Show, News and Information Hour, coming up next.
Phil Hendry.
So you're calling me, you don't believe in Billy?
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that it's talking about going places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, and they won't, and they shan't, and we do, and that's where that's at. Now, this is our News and Information Hour, but really every hour is our News and Information Hour. Robert is with us. Robert Leonard, how you doing, Robert?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Like the first couple of hours, I thought it was very educational, learning about getting loogied, you know.
But getting loogied, yeah. And Bud Dickman, how are you doing, Bud?
I'm good. Except that the man called back.
That old guy called back?
Yeah, he called. He said he wanted to apologize because he saw a bare boob and then he saw a butt. And he said all bets were off.
He said he saw, what did he say?
He said when he saw a bare boob and butt, all bets was off.
When he saw a bare boob and butt, all bets was off. Okay. Fair enough. That's something I can understand.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, welcome to the final hour of our program here, and a reminder that you can win a free hour of Phil. Just go over to our Facebook fan page, and that's facebook.com/PhilHendryFans, PHANS. Like that page, you get entered into the drawing. If you've already liked the page, say at a time before the contest, go over to Twitter, and that is twitter.com/PhilHendryShow and hashtag PHS. That's hashtag PHS. At twitter.com/PhilHendryShow. And you'll enter into a drawing for a free month of Phil On our website, philhenryshow.com, which includes our live video cast, it includes a daily podcast, it includes the archives that are thousands and thousands and thousands of hours worth. I mean, the largest archive of any single radio show ever in the history of the planet Earth, and we've got it. So, my friends, it's one of the great things about this modern age of the World Wide Web is that the Phil Show, man, is saved in perpetuity.
What's that mean?
Perpetuity and forever.
Perpetuity meant forever, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you'd say, like, forever, like God's in perpetuity.
God is in perpetuity?
Yeah, because he's forever.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Yeah, God's perpetuity. I believe in the perpetuity of God.
You believe in the perpetuity of God. Look, bud, don't wear the word out, okay? It's just a word, man. There's other words, okay?
Yeah, but still.
Okay, fine. Great. Do whatever you want to do. 877, I believe in the perpetuity of God. 877-876-PHIL in our news and information hour. Now, what's the other little bit that I wanted to mention? Isn't there one other thing here? What is the... Oh, yeah. We have, by the way, if you want to listen to the show, if you don't have a subscription to our show, if you don't have a subscription to our website, rather, you don't get the podcast, you can still listen to the daily show the next day. If you're not, if you missed some of the show over your local radio station, by going to our website, and you can listen to a stream of the show right there on our website, commercial free, all 3 hours, the streaming format of the show at philhenryshow.com, so check that out. Now, D.C. Public Schools kicked off a new four-part initiative to expose students to international food and culture, and October the 26th was declared Nordic Food Day. Oh, my God!
What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Don't sound good to me, though.
Well, let's just talk about this. Nordic Food Day. All 45,000... See, I don't... I've had a little of that Nordic food and some of this jazz. It ain't for me, man. You know?
What do you got?
Well, just listen. All 45,000 D.C. public school students were treated to authentic Nordic dishes representing the countries of Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, and Sweden. The menu included Swedish meatballs, Norwegian salmon...
That's a porn term.
What's a porn term?
Swedish meatball.
Oh, will you get out of here, a porn term?
Ain't it?
I don't think so, no.
I know the movie about Swedish meatball.
That was a guy's name.
You guys are high on a mixture of noxious fumes. You know?
No.
Well, you are. I don't know what's wrong with you. What do you mean that was the name of a guy of Swedish meatballs as a porn movie? That happens to be an actual dish. Anyway, Swedish meatballs are generally, it's a meatball, you idiots, and it's made from, I think it's like made from reindeer meat or something.
Reindeer meat? That's Santa Claus.
Oh, quit balling. Yeah, I don't know if it's reindeer meat. It's something. Anyway, Swedish meatballs. Norwegian salmon.
What's that?
Salmon that speaks Norwegian. It's
that ain't funny. Everybody know that ain't funny.
And oh, shut up, bud, will you? The running commentary. Finnish rye bread and Icelandic-inspired skyr, S-K-Y-R, along with Danish-inspired open-faced sandwiches. And no, I don't know what skyr or skier is. The specialty items that are hard to obtain were donated, and D.C. Public Schools purchased the rest, said Paula Reichel of DCPS. The donated items included Siggy's Skyr, which is a thick Icelandic-style yogurt.
That was booze.
Yeah, that's right, bud. They're going to serve booze at a kid's school, man. Speaking of that, they have a kind of booze. What's that swill that they drink up there? I got a bottle of it one time, man, and I'm telling you, it put me on my back.
What?
It's like it's a Scandinavian liquor. It's a Scandinavian spirit, and I want to call it Luda. No, it ain't Lutefisk or any. Oh yeah. No, wait. That's a Jewish fish. Yeah. What the hell am I? What's that booze? You guys? Anybody close to a computer? Which. I'm close to actually four computers, but I don't have the time to look it up. Bud, can you do that?
How do you spell it?
I don't know, man. I don't know what it's called.
Just put in, like, Norwegian booze.
Yeah, okay.
Norwegian booze? Put in Norwegian spirit or something like that. The donated items included Siggy's Skyr, a thick Icelandic-style yogurt, Ligonberry jam furnished by IKEA, and special bread called Scandia, donated by a Scandinavian bakery in Atlanta. The
But D.C.?
I don't imagine they got much call for Scandinavian food in D.C., if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, well, they got it in Atlanta.
Well, that's a good point, too. I don't know why they have it in Atlanta. Anyway, so they had, this was donated by the very good people there at that place in Atlanta. The purpose of Nordic Food Day was to expose students to new, nutritious, and appetizing foods in school while encouraging them to recreate the recipes with their parents or guardians at home. A Nordic cookbook with easy recipes was distributed to students during the event. That's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, it's good.
That's pretty cool. Nordic Food Day concluded with a reception at the residence of the Norwegian ambassador, as well as a fundraiser at the Danish embassy to bring more salad bars to DCPS schools. A fundraiser at the Danish embassy to bring more salad bars to DCPS schools. Cool. DCPS International Food Program brought out embassies, brought other embassies into the mix as the academic year continues. An Indonesian Food Day is planned for January, and Panama will be the focus in March. So that's very cool, and so I think that it's called Brenovan. Brenovan. I don't know that that's the stuff. You know what? I don't recognize that name. Wait, did you say Norwegian? Well, you know, I'm sure that that's one.
What's it called?
It's called Brenovan.
That's the guy that ran Russia.
Who's the guy that ran Russia?
Brenovan.
Brezhnev? Are you idiots or something?
Well, no, but I thought it was.
You got to be a real idiot, man, to come up with that one. We're talking about a Norwegian liquor, and you guys, oh, no, that's the guy that ran Russia? If I'm talking about a Norwegian liquor, rest assured that it ain't the guy that ran Russia. It's called Brenovan. That's what Chris Johnson found for us, and I'm sticking with that. Unless you can find something else. So how about that, man? Scandinavian Food Day. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, you were saying about having a Swedish meatball being made out of reindeer or something. I don't know if I want to eat that or not.
Well, I don't know, man. I've had reindeer.
What? In what way?
Yeah, what way?
Jeez. I've had reindeer meat of some kind. I don't know. I think it's it might be in the meatballs. I don't know. They're smaller, the Swedish meatballs, and they are in a different kind of a sauce. It's very good, though. It's very good. I've not had any of this other stuff, the Icelandic-style yogurt, the jams, but I bet you anything. Now, up here is our little town up here in California. We've got, what the hell's the name of the town, man?
What?
The freaking town that everybody goes to that's got all the Danish stuff. How do you like that, man? I can't even remember the name of the town. Anyway, we have our little town up here that we go to at Christmas time, and you can buy a lot of that Scandinavian. You can buy those, like, those fritter pans, and you buy those Danish cream puffs. I don't know why I'm talking about this, because I'm on a diet, and I ain't going to be eating any of that stuff this Christmas, so you can just kiss that goodbye, you know?
Yeah, I'm thinking about that, man, at Christmas time. It's called, you go up to Scootaloo.
Scootaloo. Now, my mind is drawing such a blank, I can't remember the name of the town that everybody goes to here. It's it was a Chamber of Commerce idea, and I can't remember it. So when I come back, maybe I will, and maybe it won't matter, and we'll be back anyway. Black voter support for Obama is steady and strong, according to this article in the New York Times. I don't know whether that's good or bad. Little diversity among Occupy Chicago protesters. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. And profanity is making a splash in book titles. That's all ahead of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We have a very funny map of the world that on our Phil TV and HD we've started featuring, and I must say that I stole it from Kathy Valentine's Twitter page. If you don't know Kathy Valentine, geez, am I getting her name wrong?
You better get her name right, man. She follows you on Twitter, and you follow her back and everything like that.
Jesus. Forget about what I just said. We stole it from somebody, and it's really funny, and it shows the world as perhaps we should see it. All right, now, I'll look up her name. Black voters' support for Obama is steady and strong. Despite a school of thought in Washington that Mr. Obama's support among blacks is weakened because of the poor economy and a sense of unmet expectations, interviews and public opinion surveys show that his standing remains remarkably strong among African Americans. Well, yeah, this sense of unmet expectations and a school of thought and all this other crap is all the white liberals. And maybe white conservatives, too, but it's whites. That's what a lot of people are hoping for, and that's what a lot of people are fearing, and that may be true, but what's the reality? Well, he still has a strong base of support among African Americans because, hey, that's a pretty heavy thing, a black president. First time in the history of the country, it's happened in our lifetimes, and now we have a black candidate for president, Herman Cain. Nobody's even mentioning the guy's race. And there will be more. Now, what does that mean? It means that there is a higher opportunity for better thinking. One of the things that nobody ever wants to mention this when you talk about, for instance, affirmative action, which I'm a conservative when it comes to business, but I also see where affirmative actions help the country, you know.
You're going to start getting into boring stuff.
Well, if I start getting into boring stuff, you let me know, okay, bud?
All right.
God, man. I mean, what is up with you guys?
Well, I just want to make sure it don't come out boring. Because the last time you come in and start talking about boring stuff, you know, I mean, we'll lose listeners and everything else. Now you're going to start talking about what? Black people? Black voters? You don't, not, I, take it from a black man. Don't do it.
Let me just say one thing, okay? I just want to say one thing.
Yeah, you talk about affirmative action. That's a killer, man. That's an audience killer. Don't do it, man.
Oh, will you shut up? All right, now, what I was going to say is I was going to say that now I'm forgetting. Oh, yeah, now I know. The idea that, what, bud?
I got Mr. Hall.
What, did you call him up?
No, I didn't. He's calling in.
All right, David Hall, and then we'll get back. Yes, David.
All right, yeah, these guys are just trying to warn you. You're going off of affirmative action, Phil. You're going to murder everything that we've ever just. Everything we've tried to build, you're going to murder.
I have a point I'm going to make about the Obama story.
Yeah, but when you say affirmative action, you're going to murder. You're going to literally murder every piece of momentum that we've been able to build for the show. It's like taking, if the show was a baby, you're taking a loaded Luger and blowing its brains out.
Oh, my God. What a image.
I'm telling you, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
All I was going to say is that affirmative action has done some good things.
Oh, that's sexy. Yeah, how about that, you guys?
Oh, yeah, man, that's real sexy. I want to hear all about that, man.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, please. Please do talk about how bitching firm action is and everything.
It's not called firm action, bud. It's called affirmative action.
Well, yeah, but so what?
Well, that shows how bright you are. You don't even know what it's called.
Who cares what it's called? You know, if this show was a baby, you squished its head with a gun.
Listen, now he's talking that way.
As well he should, because I'm telling you, Phil, somebody's got to wake you up. You're doing fine. You're going along great. Then all of a sudden you get on your soapbox, and man, you just commit homicide. You commit the literal homicide of this radio show. If this show were a baby...
I know I'd blow its brains out with a Luger.
That's right. Now, I am going to have the Institute, as you know, and we've talked about this, Phil. You signed off on this, and it is the show monitor. All we're going to be asking to do is that with the show monitor, we are able to keep track of what you're talking about, and if it begins to drift into some of this stuff, we can give you a little bit of a signal that doesn't have to be that overt with the audience. Did you hear that?
What was that?
Bud?
Yeah, just the show monitor. If you start to talk about anything, everybody's bored, you'll hear this sound. Okay, now that will only be sounded about what they do.
Is this idiot going to run that?
Yes, but what do you mean idiot? That's Bud's job. He's not an idiot, Phil, just because he was in a motorcycle accident.
Yeah, you think I'm a retard?
No, I don't. I just, is he the judge?
Bud has my full confidence. He has my full faith and confidence, as he does the... As he does the sponsors. Phil, we want you to succeed, okay? We don't want you to do to your show what you've done many nights. Now, I understand that you feel very strongly about affirmative action, and that's just wonderful. And, boy, I hope someday you get to go to Congress and talk about it. But you talking about it on a talk show, you're going to commit murder, the murder of your show. And, yes, I'll say it again, and don't interrupt me. If your show was an infant, you'd have take it and throw it off a bridge 60 feet high until it bounces off the rocks below.
You just like the image of that, don't you?
How dare you? Of course I don't.
Well, all this stuff about if your show is a baby...
That's what you're doing to it!
Yeah, you gotta understand, Mr. Henry. Your show is a baby. You're kicking it like it's...
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. You're kicking it like it's a punt.
Yeah, like it's fourth down, and you need to pin it between the 20 and the goal line. The ball is a baby, and you're kicking it high in the air, getting hang time of about 4.5 seconds, and then...
Okay, fine, thank you. Get him off the phone, will you?
But you're getting hang time on a baby.
What you guys are saying is I'm doing a lousy show.
No, we're not saying that at all. We're saying if you start talking about affirmative action, stuff like that, then you're going to have to hear the show monitor. That's all we're saying. We're saying you're doing that right there.
So if I'm saying something that's... What, bud?
If you're boring everybody and it's and you're drop-kicking a baby...
What is this drop-kicking a baby? What is that?
If you're getting hang time on a baby...
Get him back on the phone, will you?
Hold on. Yeah, Mr. Hall, Phil wants to talk. Okay.
What's up?
What is this hang time?
I said if the baby was a football, you'd be kicking it up.
Oh, okay. All right. I got it.
Yeah, you're getting hang time.
Getting hang time. What a stupid thing to say, man. What a stupid thing to say. That's saying that I am on purpose taking my show and booting it high in the air, getting a hang time of 4 minutes.
Yeah, but it's a baby.
And it's a baby.
Not hang time of 4 minutes. Man, if you get a 4 minute hang time, you'd be like the greatest punter.
You'd be better than Ray Guy.
4 seconds is what I mean. All right. Okay, so we won't talk about that. We got the show monitor in place. And I think that is as it... Why'd you do that?
It's boring.
Yeah, move on.
I'm explaining to people that we're not going to do the...
Just forget it.
The next topic that we're going to talk about now on the Phil Henry Show. Why'd you do that?
Do the next topic. Just do the topic.
Yeah, don't do the setup, man.
Do you guys hit the button on yourselves when you're boring people?
See, you're really digging a hole.
Yeah, man. You're taking that baby, you're punting it, and yeah, nobody's going to get a return. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't know what you're saying. Nobody's going to get a return on what?
No one's going to return the baby.
If you mention that baby one more time, you know what I'm going to... All right, on the Phil Henry Show. So let's see, we already did Nordic Day food. The little diversity among Occupy Chicago protesters, apparently in... The Occupy Oakland...
Can you knock it off with that thing? The show monitor.
We'll be back, Phil Henry Show. Coming up, we're going to be talking... We'll be right back on the Phil Henry... We'll be right back.
Kicking a baby.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Hey, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and it's our News and Information Hour. We were just talking about pit bulls, dogs, because of this asinine discussion I was having with Bud and with Robert about dogs, and we were actually talking about babies, right?
Yeah.
And you idiots are talking about my show. If my show was a baby, I'd punt it up in the air like it's a football. But I had remembered having that exact instinct, and it was a very real instinct with a dog that bit my daughter, and I wanted to take this animal. It belonged to a friend of mine, so I resisted the temptation. But I'm telling you, I saw myself picking this dog up and taking it out back of the guy's house and booting this thing into a lake that he had behind his house. I was ready to do it, you know. So the idea of kicking something.
Don't you like dogs?
I love dogs. Love them. I think they're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And I understand. And I think that show, what the hell do you call that one?
What?
The show with that guy, that the leader of the pack deal.
Oh, yeah, the Dog Whisperer.
Yeah, the Dog Whisperer.
Dog Whisperer, there you go. I think that cat's really, really wise. I think that cat says really smart stuff. And he says one thing that makes total sense. He says, let it be a dog. It's not a person, you know?
Well, what's that mean?
It means let it be a dog. It's not a freaking person, bud. It's not, you know, every time you pat a dog on the head, you reinforce whatever the dog just did. So let's say the dog's really nervous and is barking and is barking and is barking and is barking. And you go over to it and you pet it to try to calm it down. That's what would calm a human being down. But that doesn't calm a dog down. What that does is it tells the dog, good dog, keep barking and keep being nervous and keep being a pain in the ass.
What are you supposed to do?
Well, I don't know, but I'm not the Dog Whisperer, man.
Where do you find this Dog Whisperer?
What do you mean, where do you find? You knew who he was.
Well, I heard about him.
He's on TV. That's where you find him.
Oh.
Where do you find the Dog Whisperer?
Yeah, he's on TV. I forget the channel.
National Geographic. But what he says, a lot of things make sense. He says, let it be a dog. And he said one thing that I think is really wise. He said, my job is to train humans. He said, I train humans, I rehabilitate dogs. I train humans, I rehabilitate dogs. Because what he's trying to do is he's trying to teach the dog, get the dog back to being a dog and not being a second-rate human. And the training comes with the humans. You know, if a dog is laying around and a dog looks lethargic, it isn't because the dog is depressed. You know, it isn't because the dog is sad. It's because the damn thing needs some exercise. He needs to get up off his ass. You need to take him out and walk him, you know, or something like that. I mean, I'm being very overly simplistic.
Yeah, well, you don't talk like that, do we?
Yeah, does he say get it up off its ass?
He should. If I knew enough about dogs, I'd have my own Dog Whisperer show. That's what I would say. Get the dog up off of its ass and get it outside. And then the other thing he said that a lot of people, and here's the thing. We did a show once. I did an hour on the Dog Whisperer. And there's a lot of people that don't like the Dog Whisperer because there's a lot of people that think they know all about dogs. Maybe they do. And those people that are in opposition to the Dog Whisperer are obviously the ones that think they know a lot about dogs, and they know more about dogs than him. And maybe they know more about dogs than him. I'm not saying that he's the all-time genius, but I'm saying the stuff he says makes sense. And when someone argues against it, it doesn't make sense. Like, if a dog is a pack animal, and dogs believe in, and there is a sort of a pecking order in a pack, this guy, the dog whisperer, will say that, never let the dog walk in front of you.
Why?
Because the dog will think he's running the pack. Now,
the dog's going to think he's smarter than you?
Well, may not. The dog doesn't think that way. The dog is thinking, okay, I'm out in front, so I'm heading the, you know, I'm leading the pack. They found in New Orleans after the flooding of Katrina, the animals that survived, the dogs particularly that survived from the Katrina flood and were eventually out on the streets of New Orleans, these were now dogs that, these were formerly domesticated and still domesticated dogs, but they were now feral in nature. They were...
What's that mean?
Well, feral means a wild, but they weren't entirely wild, but they were getting that way, and they had formed packs. And one of the striking features of these packs was that the smartest dog and perhaps the most dominant dog would be the leader of the pack, and oftentimes it was a small dog.
You're kidding me. Like the little tiny dog would lead it?
Yeah, you would see packs of dogs being led by the alpha dog in that pack, and it was a little dog. Maybe not a chihuahua, but it was a smaller dog than the other dogs, which were much, much bigger. That dog took over in terms of where to go for food, where to go for shelter, what to do and how to do it, and so the other dogs followed. And so that's how dogs think. And this guy is just talking about that, you know.
Well, I mean, you know what? You're talking about that guy like he's great. I tried to get that guy on for an interview, and he don't care, man. He thinks his stuff don't smell.
Yeah, he thinks his dude doesn't smell.
Who?
The dog whisperer.
Yeah.
Well, look, I don't care if you get him on for an interview. You guys try to get him on for an interview?
Yeah, we try to get him on for an interview, and he's just all, well, I don't know.
Did you talk to him?
No, but that's what I imagine he was saying.
You know, I'll bet you anything, Bud, when you guys contact somebody on my behalf to get him on the show, I don't know what they think. Are you talking to him?
Sometimes. Sometimes Robert do.
Sometimes and sometimes Robert do.
Yeah, your grammar's bad, man.
Yeah, yours isn't that much better.
Okay, fine. We don't have to have the dog whisperer on a show. That's not what we're doing around here. Do you understand?
Yeah, but I thought it'd be fun because of what he, you know, all the stuff that he does. And plus, the dog whisperer, they're wondering trying to find a cat whisperer.
Yeah, do you know if there's one?
A cat whisperer? No, man, I don't know if there's a cat whisperer, okay?
Well, because if a cat whisperer, probably cat would be on your face.
Why? Because it's,
yeah, it's quiet.
I don't know there's a cat whisperer, man. I don't know. The thing about cats that I learned, I had a book on cats because my kids had cats, and cats are the opposite of dogs. Cats are predator hunters. They're not pack animals. They are loners, or they buddy up, as they say. So cats, when you relate to a cat relates to you on the basis of you're his buddy. And then he has his individual relationships with all the other members of the household, but he's not all pack mentality about it. So he comes over and he sits on your lap, or he goes over and he talks and meows to somebody else, and that's what cats do. The other thing about cats is they own spaces around the house. A cat will take over a space. You ever been working at your desk? I don't know if anybody on the listening. This happened to me a lot when we had our cat. I'd be sitting at my desk at home, and the cat would jump right up and sit right in an inbox that I have for mail and for just important papers.
What was he doing, sleeping there?
He would just get right there in that inbox and sit there, man. That's where he was going to be, and he's sitting there next to Phil. You know, it was very funny. Or he would, if I had a newspaper that I was reading and I had it spread out on the table, he gets right up there and he sits on that newspaper. I think it's their way of, they connect to one human being at a time. And then the other thing that everybody notices about cats is the fact they bring their kill.
Oh, man, that one cat, remember that cat that brought the dead bird?
Cats will bring dead birds, they'll bring dead, and I used to think that was the cat saying, look, I'm doing my job. But that's not what that is. It's the cat bringing back kill for food.
What are you talking about?
That's the cat saying, okay, I'm doing my part here. Here is some food.
Like a dead mouse?
Dead mice? They don't know from humans. What the hell do they know, man? They probably think we eat mice. Who the hell knows? They eat them. They're perfectly fine with eating mice. So they'll kill a bird, or they'll kill a mouse, or they'll kill whatever's on the perimeter and bring it and put it on the, like the welcome mat, you know.
It's a way of saying welcome home.
Yeah, welcome home. Here's your dead mouse. But they do. They kill the animals that come into their territory. But the reason why they lay it on the mat is to say, "Here's something to eat."
What do you? I thought it was to say, "Look at me, I'm doing my job."
That's what I thought. That's what I. But apparently, that's not it. It's not necessarily. I don't know. Some of these guys that speak cat. You know, one of the things about cats is. They come from wildcats. The cats that we have in our houses today were domesticated from originally either the African wildcat, the African sand cat, or other wildcats in Europe. And there's a wild, and if you look at wildcats, they look just like regular house cats, except sometimes they have bigger heads. They've got higher ears. They're wild. They're not domesticated. They're wild cats. But that's what domesticated cats come from. And there's a couple of them that are going extinct. One of them's called a Scottish wildcat. And you ought to see this animal. It's something else, man. It's a cat. Looks. You'd swear to God it's a regular house cat, except it's got these big ears and these big bugged out eyes. And it's wild, man.
You mean wild like it's cool?
No, it's wild like it's wild. Yeah, it's cool. It's
wild, but it's wild.
It's a wild cat, man. Yeah, but it's also wild. And so there's a lot of different things going on to try to preserve. I don't know whether you're going to be able to preserve them or not. What the hell do you know? I mean, one of the things that's wiping out wildcats is that they're interbreeding now with domestic cats. So gradually the wildcats are you know, getting watered down or whatever the hell you'd call it, you know.
But where are they from?
Well, the cats that the domestic cats that we have today come from either the African wildcat, there's a sand cat, and then there's a European wildcat, and there's different versions of the European wildcat. One of them is a Scottish cat. The dogs all come from wolves from either Western China or the Middle East.
I heard about the Western China, like the four female wolves.
Yeah, I haven't been able to find that story, but that all dogs all over the world, all domesticated dogs all over the world, originated with four female wolves in Eastern or Western China. I don't know. I haven't seen that story anywhere else, but it's fascinating to contemplate that. But they now believe that many dogs were domesticated in the Middle East, in some part of the Middle East. Anyway, I don't know how we got off talking about dogs, but at least you guys didn't hit that boring thing. So
I forgot to do it.
Yeah, you forgot to do it because it wasn't so boring, was it? All right, we're going to come back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Companies are marketing moisturizers to macho men. Yes, that's right. Macho men are now going to have to soften their skin or not. I don't know that it matters to anybody, but isn't that weird? Ha, ha, ha. No, it's not. We'll be back. Thank you. We'll be back on the world-famous Phil... Hey, don't overdo it now, bud. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
I just looked at this. This is I was looking at another story that I'll get to. Representative Lofgren, copyright bill is the end of the internet. This is a Representative Zoe Lofgren, the California Democrat, whose district includes the heart of Silicon Valley, is preparing to lead congressional opposition to the new Stop Online Piracy Act. The anti-piracy legislation introduced yesterday to the House of Representatives. When I say yesterday, what is the date on this story? Well, it's the 27th. Today is the 28th, technically. So it was yesterday. So I'm still reviewing the legislation, but from what I've already read, this would mean the end of the internet as we know it, whose congressional district includes the high-tech center of San Jose, will be a key ally for Google, Yahoo, and other tech companies who are already working with advocacy groups through trade associations to figure out how to defeat SOPA, also known as the E-Parasite Act. So far, at least, they're outnumbered, outspent, and outgunned SOPA's backers, including the Republican or Democratic heads. Well, I'll tell you what. If YouTube is opposed to this current Stop Online Piracy Act, then there must be something to it, because YouTube, what am I saying? YouTube loves to post copyright infringing material. I shouldn't say they love it, because they do take it down when they're asked to take it down. And this must take it another step. It must take it to an unrealistic extent in the mind and in the eyes of YouTube. Because, look, folks, copyrights have been with us for a long time. They're necessary. They protect people's work. And more importantly, when we say they protect people's work, it protects people's income. Because many people, including myself, rely upon income from copyright-protected works to make their living. And when you want to remove that copyright protection, you're basically saying, you, Phil Henry, and you, all of you people out there that make your living on your copyright protected material, you don't have a right to make a living. Well, that's not fair. It's certainly, I mean, to use an Obama word. All right. Lofgren has also earned the enmity of some copyright lobbyists for trying to expand Americans' fair use rights. In 2002, she introduced a bill which was ultimately unsuccessful that would amend the Digital Millennium Copyright Act to allow consumers to make backup copies of digital media, such as DVDs, that they had lawfully purchased. Well, that doesn't sound bad. Making a backup copy of something. What we're talking about here is making whatever you have available to the public, regardless of whether you know the person or not. So you're not sharing with a friend. You are now just making it available to any anonymous person out there. You are attempting to defeat the person's copyright, which is and should be illegal. So maybe I had to look into this Representative Lofgren. Why are you so interested in this, Representative Lofgren? Don't you know anybody that owns a copyright? Have you ever written anything that's copywritten? Are you yourself copywritten, Representative Lofgren? I don't know. All right, let's move off of that and get into something that's much more interesting. Check this out. Google is gearing up original YouTube programming. Original YouTube programming, according to a column on CNET. YouTube will soon offer its own original programming, the Wall Street Journal reported today, citing anonymous sources. According to the Journal, Google could announce original programming exclusive to YouTube as early as next week. The Journal's sources said that Google has inked deals with Interactive Corp's Electus, News Corp, CSI creator Anthony Zucker to create content for its site, and celebrity skateboarder Tony Hawk has also reportedly signed a deal with Google. Reports of Google trying to bring original content to YouTube first cropped up in April. So YouTube, in your attempt to defeat the Stop Piracy Act, keep in mind that you will now have original content of your own that I'm sure you will not want pirated, or maybe you will. I don't know. But this is really cool because guess what this is, ladies and gentlemen? This is Google creating original content. They already have original content, of course, which is your content, the stuff that you guys like to upload there. And if you get enough views, then they share 5 cents of every 10 cents they make, something like that, on the advertising that they sell. But perhaps this gives the average person even more of an opportunity to get something up on YouTube that you can make some real money on. All signs pointed to the possibility of Google getting into the original content game back in March when the company announced the acquisition of Next New Networks, a video production firm that YouTube said at the time would work in a hands-on way with a wide variety of content partners and emerging talent to help them succeed on YouTube. If YouTube does in fact release original content, it would mark a significant shift for the site. Over the years, YouTube has relied on third-party content and has consistently said that it's not in the original content game. Well, guess what? According to the Journal's sources, that's the Wall Street Journal, Google has designs on becoming a next-generation cable provider and has shifted its focus. Independent data released this week actually reflects a shift in consumer habits, with internet video consumption starting to rival cable. Very heavy. And put that next to what we were telling you about internet radio being now sold, individual internet radios that you can use with your home entertainment system. Think about this now, folks. You have your home entertainment system with your internet radio, with your internet video, and television as we know it, and radio as we know it. Goodbye. Goodbye. All those companies are gone. And the individual entrepreneurs, and if you want an example of the entrepreneur economy that is beginning to arise in America, there's no clearer example of it, though, than in this the entertainment medium, what is happening in my business and elsewhere. Individuals owning their own content, creating their own content, putting it on the internet, either by way of radio, audio, or by way of video, and making money that way. So all of the bigger companies out there... Now, of course, they're trying to, you know, be a part of this. News Corp, which is Rupert Murdoch's company, is going to contribute, according to this story. We'll see what happens next week. Anthony Zucker, who's the creator of CSI, and individual television producers. But the big-ass companies, the CBSs, the NBCs, the we'll see what happens as to whether or not they are in the game, man. You know.
You know, I got to tell you something. As much as I, you know, I was really kind of enjoying what you were saying and everything, but I had to hit the button, but I couldn't find it. So, you know.
You had to hit the button, but you couldn't find, you mean the boring button?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what happened to it, but thank goodness for that. The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by, it's produced by Dan Northcraft, Phil Henry, Fred Scotty, and Chris Johnson. And, of course, is here each and every night. And we're also online at philhenryshow.com. So if you'd like to join us at philhenryshow.com, be sure to get over there and... Yeah, there it is. I knew it.
Yeah, just found it.
Be sure to get over there and get yourself a backstage pass and sign up for our subscription. Also, win a free... Will you shut up? Win a free month of Phil. Details forthcoming here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.